Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Chris Marshall of the Clickit Comics Library.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. This is the Mail Report for December 2011. We're covering the top trade sales through Diamond to retailers. This is going to cover the top 300 trades, and by trades I mean graphic novels, soft cover trade paperbacks, hardcovers, omnibus, masterworks, archives. What other types of collections we got these days? We got all kinds, don't we?
All kinds, John. It never ends.
I know.
A new format every month.
And in every one of those is The Walking Dead.
Exactly, yes.
Hey, if it works for him, more power to him. Jeez, it's working for him. So top of the list in terms of the breakdown of the top 300 trades by units, 27.21% of the total units sold for the top 300 went to DC. DC, we've talked about this before. It's fairly common to see it up here at the top of the list. Maybe not always the first spot, but usually, you know, it is. And if not, it's pretty close behind. What was kind of interesting this time around is the second largest number of units for a publisher was 24.40% of the total units for the top 300, and that went to Image. You know, DC had a total of 81 items on the list. Now, 59 of those were reorder, according to my spreadsheet here, and 22 were new. Image only had 15 new items, but 29 reorder items for a total of 44 items. And it accounted for almost a quarter of the sales for the top 300. You know, this seems to be a pretty strong month for Image in that respect. And it beat out Marvel, which had 37 new items, so over twice as many new items, 10 reorder items, so a third of the number of reorder items is Image, but a total of 48 items compared to the total of 44 for Image, and Marvel only accounted for 20.09% of the total units sold for the top 300.
So, yeah, you know, when I saw it, I mean, I wasn't quite, I was surprised when I first saw it, but then I went over to the trade list to see what actually came out, and then I wasn't that surprised in terms of units, though, right? Because
yeah,
it's pretty much Walking Dead. But when you touch on the dollar amount, I'm definitely not surprised that Marvel kind of won in that category.
Well, yeah, because you look at the same total aggregate sales for the top 300 by dollars, and it's a bit of a different picture.
Mm-hmm.
32% of the dollars went to DC, 19.62% of the dollars to Image, and 25.62% of the dollars to Marvel. And a lot of that just reflects the difference in the high price for any item, the low price for any item, and kind of that average price for the items.
Right.
And all three of these publishers had some high-ticket items out. There was at least one item at $150 from DC, one at $100 from Image, and one at $125 from Marvel. So it had been a while since we'd really seen, I think, I guess within a couple of recent months, we've seen a lot more high-ticket items.
Well, yeah, but if you're looking at the average price, though, DC comes in at $24.26, Image at $24.40, and then Marvel at the higher end at $28.57. So,
well, and again, that average price difference of, you know, $4.17
yeah,
over Image, plus having four more items than Image, is how
right,
come they did so much better. I mean, 6 percentage points better by dollars versus the 4.31% less than Image by units.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows how you can really kind of influence the dollar percentages just by how you price things.
Well, I mean, and we're going to get into this when we do our year-end numbers, but looking at a month-by-month basis, is this something that Image can keep up?
You know, that's a really good question, because Image is such a unique beast in terms of a publishing entity. Walking Dead is a huge juggernaut for them. They've got a huge, diverse lineup of titles, and no real control over that, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we had a couple of items this time on the trades list that you know, are they going to show up ever again? I mean, who knows? Maybe they will, maybe they won't. But it's not like Image can say, well, you know, we're going to do another volume of Red Wing or whatever. Well, if Hickman wants to, Hickman will. If Hickman doesn't want to, Hickman won't. You know, so can Image really keep this up or not? I really don't know. I mean, they've got a strong lineup with the Kirkman titles. I really don't think Top Cow's much of a factor. You know, Spawn and Savage Dragon are still out there, but not really sales juggernauts by any stretch of the imagination. So it just comes down to, can they keep the creators that are publishing all these other titles there, happy and productive enough to be getting trades out on a regular basis? You know, or is this a case of, you know, most of the stuff just happened to get collected and come out around December for the Christmas holidays or whatever, and they're going to have a dry spell of new material and trade format for a couple of months? Now, I haven't really looked that closely at the Image, you know, lineup of what trades are coming out in the future to really judge that.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, we're always talking about evergreen titles, and take Walking Dead out of the equation, and how does Image look?
You know,
You
that's
know,
it.
take the number one property from Dark Horse, whatever that is, or IDW, and take that is, and you know, then you kind of get a different picture of what these companies are like and what they're dependent on.
Yeah. Well, and there's no arguing again the influence Kirkman has in terms of the sales with Walking Dead.
Right.
You know, I'm going through the trade list and filtering it down to Image and now filtering out Walking Dead, and there is literally dozens of items I'm having to filter out for Walking Dead.
Right.
And it whittles the list down to 20 items. So think about that for a second. We had a total of 44 items on the list. Over half of them were Walking Dead trade paperbacks, compendiums, hardcovers, omnibus. What other variants does he have in this list? You know what I mean?
Right.
It's staggering. And of course, he's got like a dozen volumes of the trades, and I think you know how many? 15 or whatever of the trades, two of the omnibus, compendium, whatever. It's insane. So without Walking Dead, the total sales wind up to, let's see, 19,330 units out of the total of 69,568 units. So that's what roughly, you know, two-thirds or more of the sales is coming just from Walking Dead.
Right, two-thirds, yeah.
It's, again, not a huge surprise,
right.
but it's also something Kirkman has not really been able to replicate himself.
No, I mean Invincible's a strong title, but you know, I think that's kind of been waning in the past 2 years or so.
Invincible is a long-lasting title. It is nowhere near as strong as Walking Dead.
Right.
I mean, Walking Dead is getting to the point where, on the comic side, it's really close to breaking into the top 50. You know, it ranked at 58 this time around, and you know he did that the hard way. He worked his the title, you know, worked its way up with that. Certainly, the TV show helped. I'm not trying to downplay that whatsoever, but frankly, the sales trends that title was on, I mean, those were established well before the TV show.
Right.
And frankly, the TV show hasn't like skyrocketed it beyond, you know, belief or anything.
No, and it's not like it's a full season on NBC. It's on, you know, six episodes on AMC and then what, another half season on AMC so far. So I mean, it's a TV show. It's just not getting a whole lot of play, and you know, it's on a cable channel that's down the dial that not everybody watches.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see. I'm sure with the Emmy Awards coming up next year or something like that, maybe it'll take a couple of you know, awards home with it, or maybe, you know, the Golden Globes are next week. Maybe that'll I mean, I don't even know if they're nominated for anything, come to think of it, with the Golden Globes.
It's the kind of thing that certainly helps the property, no question about it. But, and we've had this discussion many times before, where if somebody's getting introduced to a property, be it like Walking Dead or really almost any other property that would have a comic spinoff, through a TV show, through a video game, through a movie, they're more likely to encounter the comic or the trade paperback of it at a bookstore, not at a comic book store.
Right.
Because face it, if you've been going into a comic book store week in, week out for ages and just discovered The Walking Dead because of a TV show, that would strike me as a little bit odd.
Well, and we're always bringing up the fact when we're talking about movies, just because it's on TV or, you know, in a movie doesn't mean you're going to go running out to the store to buy the book.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, it's, you know, it makes people more predisposed to go pick it up, but it doesn't actually have that call to action to get them to do it. Now, one of the things I am noticing on the list of filtered down image stuff is Chew is a major factor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got all four volumes of the trade paperback. We've got the Omnivore Edition hardcover. You know, so that's doing well for them. But it's not like they've got this wide lineup of titles that are all, you know, building up steam or whatnot. You know, we've got some reorder activity for Morning Glories, but that's, you know, lower on the list.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a title that's got some good buzz. So,
there's still rumors that Chew might become a TV show.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah, but I haven't heard anything about that in quite a long time. I wonder what the...
Powers is supposed to be either a TV show or a movie. I forget which.
Powers, I think that's coming on FX. I think they're filming that right now.
That could be.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how that, you know, helps the sales of that comic, provided more issues of that comic ever come out.
Right.
You know, sometimes the worst thing that can happen to a comic book series is to get that movie or TV deal.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen a number of cases over the years where that just takes up enough of the creator's time that the comic just stops.
Yeah, right.
So going back to your question of, you know, do I think Image can really sustain this? On the Walking Dead side of things, yeah, I don't see that really cooling off anytime soon, although who knows, it could. In terms of the rest of Image, they really need to kind of step up to the plate. And I mean that less so creatively, because I think Image, again, has a really great lineup, but Image Central, the editorial or publishing, you know, traffic, book trafficking, you know, that engine, that office or whatever, they really need to be turning into more of, I don't say like a star system or something, but helping some of these properties get more into the limelight, get some more recognition, get some more sales, and to really keep the interest up.
I think also, and this is no slight on any of the creators there right now, but I think they really need to pull in some other talent, because if you look what DC is doing these days, you know, with the Geoff Johns of the world, and, you know, Marvel's got their architects, DC has their architects, and Image has theirs, but under those architects, they've got some real up-and-comer guys. You know, we've talked in the past couple, you and I have seen guys like Jason Aaron and Jeff Lemire come to prominence, and they're still getting better, and the Jeff Parkers of the world. They need some of those guys over at Image to really take off, I think.
Well, the irony is a lot of those guys are coming out of places like Image.
Exactly, right. I mean, right, but they need to keep them in-house almost, you know?
Well, and I think the way to do that is to help find a way to help their books sell better.
Right.
Because I know a number of artists and writers and stuff that I suspect would love to go do some creator-owned work, be it at Image or elsewhere, but they need to make enough money to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it doesn't seem to happen routinely, you know, with Image or any of the back half publishers.
It's not only creator stuff, but they, you know, right now, with help from the movies, that is, superhero comics are sexy, and everybody's talking about it, right? And Image, they don't really have that superhero genre. And, you know, it's all more independent stuff or off the cuff or a horror or, you know, slightly superheroish, but it's not. But, you know, they need to almost, you know, let these guys go to Marvel and then let them have their own, and I don't know how they do it with exclusive contracts and everything, but, you know, a guy like Lemire working for, who am I trying to think of? I guess it would be a Lemire type kind of guy. You know, he gets to do his stuff for Top Shelf, and he gets to do some stuff for DC.
Well, I think one of the things that's a strength for Image is not doing superhero titles. Now, granted, they've got a number of them, and they do those very well. I'm a big fan of a number of them. But I think, and this should be something we talk about when we do the year-end stuff, that with Marvel and DC, particularly on the comic side, there's some swing there from month to month, whereas the non-Marvel DC publishers tend to be fairly even keel in terms of the sales level. There's some fluctuation, but not huge peaks and valleys that you see with the established universes. And the ironic thing there is there's no one person that could really influence the, okay, in December we're going to do all this with the non-Marvel DC, and this month we're going to do that or whatever. It just seems like there is a core audience that, I don't want to say has rejected, but is looking elsewhere than Marvel and DC. In other words, don't want the big superhero universe slugfests or what have you. And again, I'm a big fan of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But are looking for more. The Chew, The Walking Dead, the
Buffy,
you know, the Buffy, the Star Wars, the new and different, the more standalone, the more singular creative vision sort of things. I mean, when Bob and I went through our year-end episode, and it's best or favorite of, you know, DC or Marvel or whatever, it was kind of hard for me to pick. But when it got down to the category Bob had added this year of kind of favorite soul creative vision thing, you know, where you've got one.
Only Bob would create a category like that.
Well, he didn't phrase it quite that way, but it was something for the work of somebody like a Stansikai who writes and draws.
Right, right.
And I had like about six or seven things. It's like, ooh, I got to mention this. I like this. This is great. This is great. You know, so there is a certain creative integrity and power when you've got one person calling all the shots and it comes out maybe not exactly how they want it, but through their undiluted vision.
Right.
You know, again, a Usagi Yojimbo.
Jeff Smith.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. You know, stuff Mark Crilley's doing on like a Brody's Ghost or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it comes along with a creative purity there. Either you love it, you hate it, whatever. But it's not like it's a compromised product.
Right.
So I think that's an area where Image and a lot of the non-superhero universe properties can really thrive.
Mm-hmm.
And it is remarkable how stable of a sales level in terms of units those books can maintain despite the turnover in creators, titles, publishers. You know Marvel or DC can have a really great time or really bad time, and you see just a big uptick or downtick or up and down or whatever. Meanwhile, the indie stuff is pretty even keel throughout. So I've always considered this to be a growth area for the industry. Because if you can get just a couple of more people to try some of these books, slowly these things are gonna grow. These are the books that also don't have the huge, you know, on the monthly side, ups and downs on individual titles. Sure, you'll get some bumps when it's a magic number issue or anniversary or whatever. But it's not like they've thrown out the creative team and the creative vision and they're going in a, you know, brand new direction 180 degrees off from where they'd gone.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, December was pretty fun. I read a lot of comics, and let's get into the top 10. Unless you want to do anything else with the breakdown?
No, the only other thing with the breakdown is just between, you know, DC, Image, and Marvel, that accounted for 71.7% of the units,
right,
and, you know, 77.23% of the dollars. So it's at least, you know, more of a three-way race, at, you know, this month, but you know, we still have just a ton of publishers that pop up on the list on the trade side.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really anyone's game.
And IDW, in terms of dollars, did come in fourth, but they came in sixth as far as units go. So,
yeah. What really, though, got me this time around was when I was charting you know, putting the episode chart together for the episode image and stuff, you know, I'm looking at that bar chart, and you got one really tall chart bar, and then one about half that, and then one about half that, and I'm like, what the hell? It's like, did I goof again? No. Top-ranked item this time around, Walking Dead Volume 15 trade paperback, an estimated 21,844 units. Walking Dead, okay, not a surprise, but, I mean, that's brilliant sales for the trade list. You know, you go one item down, and almost any other month, this would have been the top seller by far, and it was Fables Volume 16 trade paperback with 11,137 estimated units. So we go down one rank, and we've lost 10,000 units.
Yeah, they just blew it out of the water, didn't they?
Yeah.
Just unbelievable.
So, you know, then you go...
And both these books are the same price.
Yeah, yeah. $14.99, and that's a competitive price.
Very much.
You know, you go one more rank down, and we got reorder activity, and it's the first volume of Walking Dead. You know, 5,183 units, so almost half again. You know, it was just surprising how sharp of a drop-off it was. It really, I think, underscores, again, we've talked about the strength of Walking Dead. No doubt we're going to keep doing that, you know, for the foreseeable future from month to month, because it's, mm-hmm. it's a really damn strong property. But then you've also got others like Fables. Maybe not as strong as Walking Dead, but very, very strong title, very reliable title. And, you know, it's... Again, 16 volumes, Walking Dead is 15. These are getting to be, you know, a decent amount of material that if you can get somebody to go buy that first volume and like it, and then buy that second volume and like it, you can then get them to buy that third, and they're probably going to like it. And once you've got them there, getting that fourth sale shouldn't be too hard. You know, it's something that by having proven properties, having, you know, over a dozen volumes and stuff, you can actually start to get readers into a habitual buying pattern just with those trades and whatnot.
I'm going to go back, when we do our year-end show next week or whenever we do it, I'm going to go back and take a look, because I'm willing to bet that Walking Dead Volume 14 came in first place, and I want to see what number 2 was that month, just for a comparison and what the numbers were.
That's a good idea.
I wonder if it was Fables Volume 15.
If you give me just a second, I can actually pull up, because I've already crunched those numbers.
Oh, have you?
And one of the things I do there is put in the monthly trades data, and let's see, Walking Dead Volume 14 came out in June in first place.
Right.
So now let me filter that list to June.
And how many numbers did it do?
20,398.
Okay.
And again, that's
a strong showing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And now we want to see the second place item for the month, which was Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 8, Volume 8, trade paperback with 6,804 estimated units.
Ooh, man.
So... You know, when it comes in first with Walking Dead, it's knocking it out of the park.
It is, right. Was Fables on that list?
For that month? That's a good question. Let me
It probably came out in May, June, or July, I'm guessing.
Everything we had was reorder activity for that.
Oh, okay.
But if you give me a second, I can... Which volume of Fables would have been the previous one? It would have been
15.
15?
Yeah.
That first came out in April.
Oh, really? Okay.
With 11,605 estimated units.
That's on par with what it's selling right now. So.
And it was the top item that month.
Okay. What was second?
I am filtering the list.
Walking Dead number 1, probably.
Boys Volume 8, Highland Laddie.
Ah, okay.
5,284 estimated units. And that's
so there again, we've got it cuts off at the knees. You get the top item, and then half of those numbers is second place.
Often that can be the case.
Yeah, right.
But there are other months where the difference between that first and second place, you know, is 1,000 units or whatever.
Right.
you know, think back to the end of the game. We're getting more towards the year-end stuff, but that's fine. It's fine. I don't care. The January 2011 stuff, and the number one item was Jack of Fables Volume 8 trade paperback with 3,913 units, and the second ranked item was Walking Dead Volume 1 reorder activity for that trade at 2,981 units.
Right.
So, I mean, again, percentage-wise, pretty big difference, mm-hmm. but 1,000 units. But when you top the list at under 4,000 units, I mean, that really shows how weak, 2011 started off.
Right, yeah. And, yeah, you mentioned that in your article this week on CBR.
Yeah. It's very, very interesting year, and I'm glad that, you know, we're ending it on something where, you know, the top, I mean, even the third place item, the Walking Dead reorder activity in December would have topped the list in January.
Right.
The item that sold better than that was over twice that, and the item that sold better than that was over twice that, and it's like, I mean, that's great. You know, but it would be nice if the list just didn't kind of drop off so fast.
Right.
Because we're under 3,000 units by the time we drop out of the top 10. By the time we're out of the top two dozen, so 24, we're under 2,000 units. You know, we're under 1,000 units by around rank 86, 87.
Mm-hmm.
And then under 500 units by the time we hit rank 175. So there's just, frankly, I think there's too many trades coming out. You know, I think if, and you know, I talked about this in my article on CBR some, that it might behoove, you know, certainly Marvel and DC. I think this may or may not work as well for other publishers, although, frankly, it'd probably work well for most people. Don't guarantee that you're going to collect stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Make a point of actually not collecting a few things. And this almost borders on scare tactics of, well, if you want it, buy it now. But why not? How many people are going to say, you know, that X-Men Schism storyline, I'm just going to wait for the trade. Okay? Now, between the time the X-Men Schism stuff starts, and people may have had to make an emotional or financial commitment to it, and the time that trade comes out, a little time has elapsed. Well, now, you know, I see that X-Men Schism on the rack in a trade paperback format, and I'm thinking, well, you know, I've had time to hear what people think about it, be it on podcasts, at the store, on websites, you know, wherever you can get your reviews or other people's opinions.
Mm-hmm.
And you're either going to think, you know, I really don't remember what they said, so it must not have been that good. Or I remember a couple of people loving it, but then other people saying, oh, it sucked at the end. Or, you know, whatever they said for whatever the thing was.
Mm-hmm.
If you can even remember. Because even if the story was great, maybe the review wasn't that memorable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but so maybe you decide to get it, but do you have to get it right now? Maybe you want to spend that $25 for that X-Men Schism hardcover on, I don't know, a DVD, a video game, dinner, whatever. Because you can always get that hardcover later.
Mm-hmm.
You've completely removed the urgency or any semblance of a sense of urgency from that decision.
Well, and we are seeing that more and more from Marvel these days than DC. Because even if you look at the marketing for Schism. Okay, going into what's going on now.
Mm-hmm.
When Schism was coming out, you always have these, and you know, DC is guilty of it too, and I hate this stuff, but the road to Flashpoint, right? Or road to Schism, you know, all this stuff. It's like, it's just make it part of the story, but no, they got to pull you in on the marketing aspect. You've got to, you know, hey, this event's coming, you better get it. And, you know, so Schism leads into Regenesis, and Regenesis is going to lead into X-Sanction, and X-Sanction is going to lead into A versus X, you know, and we're seeing that on the street level side, too, with Punisher and Daredevil, who are both back with their new number ones this year, and you're, what, four issues in, or Daredevil seven issues in, and Punisher is four or five issues in, and already coming out this week, we've got the Omega storyline coming out in starting in April. So this is a perfect time for you either to go back and get some back issues, or this is a perfect time this month to order that trade paperback of the first storyline, and then you'll be all set to jump right in on the monthly side with Omega. And it's a round-robin game, John, that they've been doing for a long time.
Oh,
and
totally.
they're gonna keep it up. They did it with Shadowland. They did it with Spider Island. And you know, we're always talking about these micro series that they're putting out. You know.
Well, you've touched on a couple of different things there, and one of the ones I want to comment on is that whole Road to mentality.
Yeah.
Of the precursor to the next story, which is the precursor to the next story, which is the precursor to the next story.
Now, Bruce Wayne did it. They did it in the Bruce Wayne storyline, too.
They do it all over the place. And it's like they're trying to lead the readers by the nose just a little bit further.
Yeah.
A little bit further. Okay, now that we've gotten you that, a little bit further. You know, and it's like a constant tease to the sense, well, eventually this will have payoff. And, of course, sometimes it does. Sometimes it's brilliant.
Right.
Other times it's just, well, here's the next story. I mean, to me, this is epitomized on a monthly basis when I feel that some comics are just bridging cliffhangers.
Yes.
I pick up from the last one, I end off on the next one, you know, and it frankly, it drives me nuts.
Mm-hmm.
I like a good cliffhanger, don't get me wrong. I just don't want one every month.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when the Titans Hunt started in New Titans back in the day, and even... Marv Wolfman will admit that this was probably the beginning of the end for him on that title, is it was just month after month, cliffhanger, 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 cliffhanger. And the false sense of excitement, the oh, let's you gotta read the next issue, and then that one's just so you've gotta read the next issue, versus any sense of payoff per issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I think by all this road to the precursor of, and the trying to build up to the next big thing, it's really pushing people towards, well, just wait for the next big thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not what's now that matters, it's what's next.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the entire comic industry is geared around that mentality, because how many of the news stories, or quote-unquote news stories, call them whatever you will, the articles you see on a comic book resources, a newsorama, or even the discussions you hear on podcasts or at the comic shop, are more often talking about what's coming up a couple of months from now than what happened or what just came out this past week.
Right.
And it seems to be gearing you towards an immediate sense of dissatisfaction because, well, I want to read that next thing, not what's now.
Well, it's dissatisfaction and it's also immediate gratification. Already on the message boards today, you know, I'm seeing the comments coming down on CBR and everything. You know, Punisher doesn't need to be on a crossover series, and it's like, you know, it's Greg Rucka, and you haven't even read it yet. I mean, it's just the idea kills these people. And I mean, I'm a big Punisher fan, as you know, and yeah, it'd be nice to have him in his own series, but you know what, it does make sense for him to cross over into Daredevil every once in a while. They do live in the same New York City. You know, they live a few blocks apart, and Punisher did show up a little bit in Shadowland, albeit very small, and he did show up in Spider Island as well, which is a pretty cool one shot, or part of the one shot of I Love New York City, I think it was, or I Art New York City, which is a pretty fun little tale. But yeah, I mean, so he does pop up, so I don't see anything wrong with that. You know, it's just maybe if I've got a problem with, you know, Punisher going to hang out, you know, in one book in New York and then San Francisco with Uncanny X-Men the next one. You know what I mean? But keep him somewhat grounded in continuity.
Well, and frankly, he fits with Daredevil.
They're
both street-level people. Sure, Daredevil's got the radar sense, whatever, but it's not like when you've got the Punisher going up against Sentry.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah.
Ludicrous.
Right.
But...
And you gotta have Spider-Man in every title, that's for sure. I
mean,
it's just a given these days. Spider-Man and Batman, every title.
The oversaturation on those characters is kind of ridiculous.
Oh, it's unbelievable. Oh, my God. I mean, I'm reading, just not to get off track, but, you know, I'm reading everything going on with DC these days, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I love Scott Snyder's Batman, right? And everybody loves it. And look at the spinoff that's getting these days, right? But I'm also reading Batman and Robin, which is fun, and Detective, which, you know, it's like, where do all these things fit in? And how is this going to cross over into the new Court of Owls stuff that's going to be coming up? You know, it's just so much. And then Batman Incorporated's coming back. It's like, oh my God, enough is enough. And we will see when we discuss the year-end numbers where Batman shows up, and he is all over the place. It's Walking Dead and Batman, not to get too far ahead of ourselves. But I know he sells, and I know he's got to be in everything. And, you know, right down the list, I mean, Batman Noel is selling again this month. But so I'm not surprised, but it's good to see. But yeah, I kind of like enough is enough in a way.
Mean, do they really need to collect all of these things?
Sure they do.
Well, I mean...
they're going to whether we like it or not.
Yes, they're going to whether we like it or not. However, I mean, as we record this, which is, you know, the evening of January 12th, today is when they announced that there was going to be that second wave of new 52 titles.
Yes.
Six titles were going away, and they announced the six replacements. And the six going away are going away with issue 8. Okay, I've got a couple of this week issue 5s coming out. You know, so we've got a couple of months before the titles all kind of end their those six end their run or whatever. Mm-hmm. And people again already focusing on that and what's next versus the what we've got today. And what if they just simply decided not to collect those titles? You know,
right.
If they
well, they already
that...
are because they already announced it. But yeah, that would be very interesting if they decided not to. Right.
Well, I mean, less so for the ones they've announced and the ones that are over. But if they had said that, you know, going, you know, if they had not guaranteed the collection of Static, of OMAC, of Hawk and Dove, I forget what the other three are off the top of my head. But
Men of War, yeah.
Yeah, but if it was a matter of if you want it, get it now, mm-hmm. versus people who read the first issue and said, well, I'll wait for trade. You know, it's trying to figure out what the desired behavior you want the readers and retailers to have, and then gearing the publication model accordingly.
Mm-hmm. Well, my question is, when I read that today or yesterday, is I really like OMAC. I think it's a really fun title, right? Mm-hmm. And I just read the crossover. I haven't read the Frankenstein one, but Frankenstein showed up in OMAC. Or the other way around, or one of the two. Anyway, there's a crossover, and my question was, okay, when the OMAC trade paperback comes out with its 8 issues, is it going to include the 9th issue with him in Frankenstein?
I doubt it.
And I'm like, I doubt it, too. And I'm like, okay.
But it could.
So
who knows?
The story picks up, you know, in this book, but, oh, it's not collected here. And see, that's what kind of bugs me, too. I don't mind if something gets collected twice, you know. Because if you're an OMAC fan, then you get the OMAC trade. If you're Frankenstein, you get the Frankenstein trade, and you still get the full story.
Yeah, I think they've also done some cases a few times where they will reprint just the relevant parts.
True.
Of the story, to where you don't have to have the subplot that would make no sense. You know, not to say that applies in this case, but mm-hmm. there have been other comics where it's like, really, 2/3 of it, gotta read to understand the second part of the story in the other book. But that
right.
other third, if all you get's that, it's kind of nonsensical.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if these publishers, though, were to just, you know, collect what makes sense to collect, but be much more selective versus, well, it was published, it must get collected, they could really start again gearing readers to really gravitate more towards the periodical monthly format, because mm-hmm. that's where they're guaranteed to get the story. It just seems like it'd be good for everybody.
Yeah, you wonder if DC would say that up front, though, instead of, you know, when it was like the cancellation of these titles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, get it now because it's not going to get collected, or say that up front when the issues are coming out, saying this storyline will not get collected for 3 years, you know, or something.
Well, and they've
like
done
that
a time or two with like 52 and some stuff like that, not going to
yeah.
collect it till it's over. You know, and I get that. It's a risk because, mm-hmm. I mean, they can double dip and get the additional money.
Well, from what I read, just going off Amazon and solicitations, of the 52 initial books, it looked like only 14 of them were going to be collected in hardcover, and everything else was going to be trade paperback.
Well, speaking of the new 52 and hardcovers, mm-hmm. you did see what was down at rank 39. Which is the DC Comics, the new 52 hardcover.
Yeah.
1,534 units.
That's now, big.
For a $150 book, that's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
It's in the top 40. I mean, if Casey Kasem were to go over the list, he'd have had to include it. I actually have not physically seen this.
I haven't seen it either, yeah.
I'll admit I haven't gone hunting for it either. I mean, it just seems like it's a... The size seemed like it'd be unwieldy.
Yeah, I kind of joked when when I heard about this book coming out, or maybe the week it was coming out of my podcast, they said, this is one of those books that you're never going to read. You just won't read it. You know, you won't sit down and read this book. So don't even bother taking it out of the plastic. And I kind of joked, I'm like, okay, when you get it in your DCBS shipment, keep it in the plastic, put it in your attic or put it in a comic book box in your basement on a high shelf so there'd be no flood damage, you know, God forbid, and just keep it there and then sell it on eBay in 20 years or something like that. You know, because this book will be sweet when it's, you know, if it's still wrapped in plastic in a couple of years.
I would question...
I mean, I did it as a joke, obviously.
Yeah, but
you know
the relevance of it.
Right.
I do think also you're right that in terms of... I mean, it's not something you're going to read, and great, you get a bunch of first issues, most of which don't tell a complete story.
Yeah, right, yeah. And a few were canceled. Six of them were canceled after 8 issues.
With that cancellation, they were implying, if not flat out stating, there was going to be a new story sensibility or whatever in some of these new titles. So maybe they're going to try to go towards more of a Dunham one, or maybe it'll be the same old. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
But it's interesting. And again, that was you know, one of the high ticket items for the month. The other high ticket items were, let's see, what were those?
Did they announce the creative teams on these books, or did they just announce the titles?
Yeah,
they did.
Creative teams on quite a few of them.
So are these the same? I mean, are these creative teams taking over the new titles, or are
no,
they just they're
different
just
creative
out?
Teams.
Okay.
I mean, one of them's like Paul Levitz on a either Earth 2 or World's Finest. I only skimmed.
That's fine. I'll take Paul Levitz. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Looks like great stuff. So I'm curious. I'm happy, but I'm not surprised. What was interesting on that dropping of the some of those titles is it was not the bottom six items.
Mm-hmm.
The one that I think is surprising is that Captain Atom, which is selling less than Hawk and Dove, was not one of the ones that got canceled.
Mm-hmm.
So I would expect Captain Atom, Voodoo, Blue Beetle,
the second time around,
iVampire,
they
and
couldn't,
Grifter
they couldn't
get the
20
round.
Titles out. No.
No, but they seem to be drawing a line at, you know, somewhere around that 18,000 mark. And, you know, I can't fault them for that. If it's not working, you know,
right,
get rid of them. But it was only about a month ago that they were saying that they were surprised they'd been able to keep them so long and hadn't had to cancel anything and things look great.
Or Stormwatch or something like that.
Yeah. Anyways, so other big ticket items this time, we had the Ecstatics Omnibus, rank 108, the hardcover there, 819 items. The Absolute Promethea Volume 3 from DC, $99.99 Absolute there, 741 units in rank 116. In rank 184, we had Watchmen, the Absolute Edition, reorder activity for that, 464 units. $200 items from Image, both of which are Walking Dead omnibuses, Volume 2 and Volume 1. Volume 2 doing 342 units of reorder activity, and Volume 1 doing 332 units of reorder activity. So, again, a couple of big ticket items. I mean, if you just bought those things that month, that would have cost you a little under $675.
Jeez. Oh my God.
Two pennies under. So, I mean, it's. You're not careful, you can spend quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, what else do we have in here that looks interesting? It was staggering, again, just how much of The Walking Dead is all over this place.
Yeah, you can't scroll once without seeing Walking Dead, can you?
No. And again, how much of this is under that 1,000 unit mark? Let's see, that first item, those first three items did a total of 38,164. To get to 38,164 takes from rank 188 down, so that's 113 items from the bottom of the list to equal the sales of the top three items. And it's funny because a lot of the stuff down in this end, I mean, a ton of it's reorder activity, but some of it's just some really good stuff too. You know, reorder activity of Kingdom Come, Bone, Old Man Logan, some more Fables, Batman Nightfall, Shaman.
Can I ask you a question about reordering?
Sure.
You know, just taking a look at this, the Batman Noel edition, right? Mm-hmm. And it ranked, I forget what the exact rank it was in November when it came out. But we talked about how you had had to order this Christmas-type book back in July.
Yes.
And it fared very, very well. Now, when do these reorders go through? If you got this book, and let's say you got this book in November, and I liked it, and I wanted a copy, does that reorder get fulfilled in December? If I go to my comic book store, like
there's two parts to that question.
Okay,
let's start with the first part of when does the reorder go through, i.e., into the system.
Yeah.
Okay. And really, at any point after the July orders were due and kind of done, you could have placed what's called an advance reorder.
Okay.
It's like, hey, I'm a little late ordering, but it's still going to be a little bit before it comes in, so
I can do like an August or a September.
Exactly.
Okay.
Okay. Then you get to the point where it ships, which in this case was November 2nd.
Right.
At which point you can actually do a kind of a true reorder, and that goes into the system immediately. And then we get to the point where it's the second part of the question of, well, when does the stuff actually get to the store? And that depends on a couple of things. One, how many copies do they have lying around?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if they've got them, they're going to ship them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so conceivably, as quickly as either the following week or possibly in some cases, you know, within a midweek thing if the store gets multiple shipments a week, although I don't know how many do that these days. I'm sure bigger stores do, and most stores don't. So as soon as, you know, November 9th is, you know, when some of that could have gotten into stores. Now, what would have happened is since that shipped on the second day of the month in November, anything that came in on the 9th and the following weeks of November would have shown up on the November sales list.
Even if it was a reorder?
Yes.
Ah, okay.
So that Walking Dead Volume 15 shipped on December 7th. So the 14th, the 21st, and the 28th, conceivably reorder, you know, could have come in and counted towards that 21,844 units.
But if it would come in to December, then it would
be in that case, those were all December. But if it come in January, it's now in the next month.
That's interesting. Okay.
It's what's invoiced for the month.
Okay.
So these lists always favor items that shipped earlier in the month than those that shipped later in the month.
Right. Yeah, we have talked about that. Right.
Because, like, X-Men Schism, that hardcover shipped on December 28th. Well, guess what? Any reorder activity probably didn't make it in December.
It was going to be in January. Okay.
Yeah. We've also seen a few cases where orders got split between the month, you know, because some shipped to stores one week and some got to other stores the next week for whatever reason. You know, they were late getting to a Diamond distribution hub, or maybe they didn't get all of it from the printer in one shot. I don't know.
Well, like the stupid Masterworks do that because they have the variant issues and they got the regular issues, and sometimes the regular order ones ship on ship 1 week and the variants ship the next week, and sometimes it's split between, you know, the last week of November and the first week of December or something like that.
Yeah.
And also what bugs me about that, and I know it bugs you about it, is that the variant volumes don't show up in their own little category. It's only the overall number of the book, when actually, conceivably, there are two different books.
Anytime an item has the same price, but the difference is a variant cover, they lump them together on the list, and the item code gets a dash M for multiple.
Yeah, right.
Now, it used to be that the item code would actually, in an insanely cryptic manner, list the different item codes in a hodgepodge abbreviated kind of a thing, which I never got around to figuring out an automated way to decipher so I could go hook, oh, these are the item codes that are in this list.
But even though the two books have different UPC codes.
Yes.
Yeah.
But from a sales perspective, these lists are kind of geared on the premise that people are reading the stories, not collecting for the original piece of art on the cover.
And the same goes on the monthly periodical side?
Yes.
Yeah.
When
one book, you know, the variant signed edition comes in at $39.99 and the other regular edition is $299.
Those cases, because
of the price differential?
Of the price differential. Okay. It depends if... let me clarify. It depends if the price differential is kind of a cover price or a markup price.
Okay.
If it's a incentive thing, but it's still, in theory, got a cover price of $299, even though you may never see it that way, it's sold as a $299 book as far as Diamond's concerned.
Okay.
You know, however, if they've got a $299 version and a $399 version, those would show up differently usually.
Got it.
Witness the fact the combo packs for Justice League are showing up as a different line item on the list.
Okay.
But you look on the trades list here at rank 27, we've got Rocketeer Adventures hardcover, 1,944 units, and it had, you know, the Dash M, so it had two versions of it, presumably different covers.
Oh, there we go. I do see that now. Okay. Yeah, the Nick Fury book. Yep. Okay. Yeah.
So it all comes down to kind of just understanding the data. And frankly, I think there's a lot more to it than some people give credit for.
Mm-hmm.
And probably a lot more to it than a lot of people care. And I get that too. So yeah, it's kind of interesting just to see, you know, where some of this places and how quickly some of the reorder activity happens and how strong some of it happens. I mean, that Batman Noel, again, 2,562 units of reorder activity. That's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not as impressive as Walking Dead, because both the first volume, we talked about that with the 5,183, and the second volume came in at rank 8 with 3,222 units of reorder activity. I mean, that second volume is really close to cracking 100,000 total reported estimated units through the top trades list through Diamond.
It probably will by next month, you know.
I was going to say, give it another month or two.
Yeah.
So, but that's again, part of the power of Kirkman there.
Mm-hmm.
If we look at the price points, 51 items were at the $19.99 price point. That's 17% of the list. That was by far the most popular price point this time around. Other price points that were kind of big were, let's see, 13% of the list or 39 items were at $14.99. Let's see, 25 items at $9.99. 21 items at $12.99. 20 items at $24.99. And 21 items at $17.99. So, you know, we've got a couple of price points there that are you know, pretty popular, and they're, again, more towards the lower end of the segment. You know, it seemed like at one point we were having a lot more things that were more at the 39, 49, 59, you know, ballpark kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we got 13 items at $34.99, 12 at the $49.99, but really most of the other price points start to get into the single digits in terms of the number of items on the list. So...
yeah, I think the companies are kind of settling in at that mark.
Yeah, I think they're going for the cheaper price points, trying to keep things more manageable. And when they go for a big price point, they're going that 100, 125, 150. I mean, they're clearly doing it. They're not trying to do the, let's see if we can sneak it in at $75.
Right.
Yeah. Sometimes they do. I mean, it just
sometimes
depends.
They do, right.
So... let's see. We talked about Rocketeer. One or two other things I want to mention real quick. When I was going through the list, Dynamite Entertainment, their trade sales are fairly low.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have a whole lot of items on the list, and the new items was averaging around 573 units. So, maybe it was just an off month for them on the trades, but, you know, that really goes to show that with, like, the Green Hornet and a few properties, it's not making up for it on the trade sales. And then the other thing I found really interesting this time around was the top-selling Marvel comic, Marvel trade, I should say, was Criminal Volume 6, or rank number 5, the trade paperback, with 3,616 units. Now, you would think with all the items Marvel's got on the list, you would hope, I would think that their top-selling item, wouldn't you want that to be part of the Marvel Universe? Not one of their creator-owned titles, essentially?
Well, how is that any different from Fables coming out?
Fair point. I hadn't really considered that, but you're right. It's the same case.
Yeah, because I think these titles, Brubaker, right? Yeah, the Brubaker stuff. It's kind of along those Vertigo lines where I think it sells better in trade. And frankly, it reads better in trade. You know, I got the Criminal Omnibus. And boy, what's that?
Who owns Fables? Does DC own Fables?
Very good question.
Or does Willingham?
Does Willingham and Gene own it? Or maybe Gene is just farmed out for covers, but...
Buckingham or whatever does a lot of the art, though.
But James Gene does the covers. Yeah. That's a very good question. I do not know.
To me, that's kind of the difference. Criminal is very clearly part of that, I guess, that Icon line and stuff.
It is.
Where it's...
Mm-hmm.
It's Brubaker's.
Right. And Powers is
Bendis's, yeah.
Right.
So it's interesting, though, that you know, some of the higher-selling stuff for these publishers, not the company-owned material.
You read Criminal?
No, I did not.
If you like hard-boiled crime, noir, you know, detective stuff, you'd like it. It's good, really, really good stuff.
Generally, I'm not a huge fan of it. I am a fan of Brubaker.
I've read,
I think it was Incognito,
mm-hmm.
Which I think is a spinoff of Criminal, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked it. But that kind of the hard-boiled noir stuff often just doesn't really click with me for a variety of reasons. I don't dislike it. I certainly don't hate it. But, you know, it's not something I tend to gravitate to.
You liked his Daredevil, though.
Yeah, I think he did some great stuff on Daredevil. I'm loving what Brubaker's doing on Cap.
Yeah, I stopped reading Cap when it turned over into the regular numbering. Or back to the original numbering, I should say.
There are a couple of writers that I just love some of their work on, but others, other work that they're doing. Rucka's one of these. You know, have I read most of his creator-owned stuff through Oni or whatever? No. Do I like a lot of what he's done over at DC and Marvel and stuff? Yeah.
What do you think of, and we're kind of getting off topic, but real quick, what do you think of Waid's Daredevil? Do you think it's the best of the year, like everybody's touting? I don't think it is.
The best Daredevil of the year or the best of the year?
People are touting Daredevil as the best book of the year.
I picked it as one of my favorites for the year, but more on the quality of the art and the way they're kind of trying to do some storytelling stuff.
Okay.
With visually how his senses work, and I thought that was cool.
That's very cool. I do like the art. As far as the writing goes and the storyline, it's okay. You know, I mean, I really like the Brubaker's run and, you know, much, much better.
I think Brubaker's run worked better for me. I'm a huge Mark Waid fan. I love
Yeah, I know you are.
Writing.
But
I don't think it's either his best work or the best Daredevil work.
Yeah.
And it comes down towards, I don't really think it necessarily plays to Waid's strengths. Again, he's doing a great job there.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of, you know, is that the place he should be and that the pinnacle of his work? No. Whereas I look at, like, Hickman on Fantastic Four, I'm trying to think, Levitz on Legion,
mm-hmm.
Jeff Johns when he was doing JSA, well, Jeff Johns on a lot of things, really.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a couple that's like, that's the property the creator should work on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not feeling that with Waid and Daredevil.
Yeah, I'm not either. I like Waid on his Irredeemable stuff, though. That's a lot of fun still. I still enjoy that.
That one's Irredeemable and Incorruptible is, I like them, but... It seems to be meandering a little bit.
Yeah. Well, we talked about, I think, over a year ago, but how long can he keep it up?
Yeah.
You know, maybe he's spending a little too much time on Daredevil these days and, you know, not as much time on what he should be working on.
Well, one could argue there's a lot of things he should be working on.
Well, that's true, too.
Unknown. Empire would be fun to come back. what else? I mean, he's Potter's Field.
Yeah.
Ruse. I mean, there's a ton of stuff.
It goes on and on.
Yeah. So anything else on the December numbers? Are we pretty good on that?
I think we're good to go. Yeah.
So what else you got coming up on your show these days?
Well, I've made a lot of changes just this past week, including a little new layout for my site.
Cool.
I've got my year in review show up and my top books of the year post is up as well. And also I'm doing a new Friday feature, John. I'm going to try and keep it up. it's a aggregation of all the collected edition news around the internet.
Cool.
A lot of websites, you know, cultivate, you know, what movies and comic stories and this, that, and everything. I'm trying to do that solely with, you know, kind of a little more stuff, but a real focus on collected editions and graphic novels. And
makes
that's
sense.
Coming out every Friday. I'm going to try and push it out at 5 a.m. Eastern time. So it's done and published late Thursday night. So after I get off the phone with you, I'm going to wrap it up and, you know, put a bow on it and go to bed. So
cool. Sounds fun.
It's fun. What's going on in your show? You're busy too.
Oh man, very busy. We've been obviously doing this is the most busy time of the year for me, it seems like. Because not only do we continue with the weekly comic spotlight, the preview spotlight and stuff, we do the year-end stuff. We did our episode for that. We're actually about to record, the two of us here, the year-end trade stuff. So this week I had to crunch the December numbers, which came out Monday. Monday happened to be my father's birthday, so I had to take, you know, him, my mom, and my sister out for birthday dinner on Monday. I got a little bit of a break Tuesday, which actually gave me time to go hit the UPS store and pick up my DCBS package for this week's comics. Not that I've read much of any. I've read, like, one. Because then on Wednesday, the year-end numbers came out for me to crunch. And, of course, Monday I got the article up for CBR. Wednesday I got the numbers crunched in the year-end article for CBR. And now here we are Thursday recording and stuff. So just crazy, crazy busy time for me. Bob did a publisher spotlight that went up as we record this tomorrow, as it airs last week. What else do I have going on? I'm trying to find time to read comics.
Yeah,
me too. It's tough. I mean, it's fun, but yeah.
Besides me trying to read comics, I'm reading the Steve Jobs biography.
I got that for Christmas.
I got it for Christmas, too. I'm on chapter 3.
Good.
I can't get through it. I'm just so damn busy, man.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like 46 chapters, and they're like 10-page chapters, right? Or 15-page chapters. I'm like, okay, I can read a chapter a night. And I'm like, you know, it's now January 12th, and I'm still 3 chapters in.
Wow.
Like, oh my God.
It's like a 600-page book.
It's huge, yeah.
I'm wanting to read that. It's just a matter of, again, finding the time. There's just so much I'm trying to get done. I'm also still trying to get the number crunching stuff rewritten. I've made some good progress on that, but it's hard to make forward momentum on that while keeping up with everything else going on.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, Bob and I are, again, you know, chugging along on the weekly spotlight and stuff. We're still doing the Marvel, DC, and other, but trying to, you know, get it to where I can cover more some of the mutant titles that he's not reading at Marvel, or he can do an indie book, or, you know, a few things like that, to where we're not just limited to stuff that's common between our two reading lists, because that's kind of diverged.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's one of the things we may talk about with the year-end stuff is just, you know, kind of, again, how the content has changed over the year. So that's about all I got for this. That pretty much do it then?
Sounds good.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themayoreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you're in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. If you're a resident of some other space-time continuum, please limit any actions you may take to that alternate reality. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. Diamond Order Index only goes to 2 decimal places, and therefore there's a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. For months in which no issue of Batman or Detective shipped, Batman: The Battle for the Cowl was used instead. The title used as the key title is irrelevant. If you do not understand why or do not believe this, please consider taking a refresher course on basic algebra. Math is fun, but only if you understand it. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied.
Sell-through information is not currently available, and we limit our reporting to the available information. If, however, you enjoy fiction, please listen to this preview spotlight for our recommendations of upcoming comic books. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications that at least one retailer may have excessive amounts of empty shelf space with dust that needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold to Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month in question. The list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to the retailers for the month in question. More than 300 graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of the top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 100, 50, 25, or as few as 10 items on the list. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as we know, has not been invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic book, graphic novel, or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 300 graphic novels and collected edition lists are included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. For some strange reason, Diamond doesn't report on sales to competing distributors. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any item sold outside of Diamond's comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. We limit this report to the available data. If more data becomes available, we'd be happy to include it. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for. No amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is inapplicable in the alternate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there. I have neither the time nor the interest in engaging in pointless debates in this hypothetical reality. There are no guarantees of accuracy, reliability, completeness, or timeliness of any of the information given in the course of this discussion. We are human, and sometimes we make mistakes. We appreciate your understanding in this area. Any statements that may contain projections or other predictions about future events should be viewed as opinions that are subject to change as new information becomes available. Actual events may unfold in unexpected ways. As Doc Brown once said, the future is what you make of it. If any statements are contradicted or contested, the participants of the discussion may disavow any knowledge of those statements.